Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blasingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc. All rights reserved.
Starting and operating a small business against all odds, living largely by your wits, you demonstrate more courage and devotion to a dream than any other non-military American in this century.
We are back. It's 13 after the hour. I'm Jim Blasingame, the Small Business Advocate, and my special guest and our new friend is Steve Bennett. He's with us right now. Let me tell you a little bit about him. Steve is a best-selling author of more than 55 books in the field of business, computing, parenting, and the environment. He's a professional spokesperson specializing in technology and family issues. He's a media trainer specializing in technology products and services. He received his BA degree from the University of Rochester in Foreign and Comparative Literature. He received his master's degree from Harvard University in Regional Studies, East Asian Studies, and he is married and has two lovely children. He lives in Cambridge, Massachusetts. He is the author of the book we're going to talk about this hour, which is his new book, which is a sort of an unusual book called The Portable Business Source, A Treasury of Insight, Wit, and Wisdom from Tomorrow's Captains of Industries. Steve, welcome to the show.
Well, thanks for having me on the air.
It's good to have you with us, and I've enjoyed getting to know your book a little bit. This is a very unusual book because it's not only unusual in a way as a business book because there are cartoons in the book, which I like. They're caricatures, and that's a lot of fun. But it's just different in several ways. Tell us a little bit about the book and why you decided to write this book.
Well, first of all, it's a different kind of business book because the insights come not from pundits and noted consultants.
Right, alleged experts like Jim Blasingame.
Or Steve Bennett. They come from children, age 5 to 11.
The real experts.
The real experts. And the purpose of the book is twofold. One, to have fun. And two, you know, I've worked a lot with kids. And it always strikes me that they have a perspective on life that's very valuable because they haven't been to business school. They haven't been to college. They just see it as it is. And I thought, wouldn't it be interesting to pose a series of business problems to these kids and see what they come up with? And the result was a portable businessaurus.
They cut right through all the baloney, don't they?
They do.
They don't have any baggage yet.
That's right, and they also have a sense of fairness in the way that the world ought to be that really stops and makes you think. And by the way, Businessaurus is a dinosaur, as you might guess.
Mm-hmm.
Businessaurus is the CEO of a company that existed in the Cretaceous period called Dinosoft Corp., no relation to Microsoft Corp.
Dinosoft Corp.
And there are seven cronies in the book, six cronies. There's Consultosaurus, who's very bad.
I like him, but I was a little upset because you made him bad.
Oh, he's my straw man. There's Litigator, and she is really bad.
Litigator.
Litigator.
Okay.
There's Cashosaur, who's the CFO. There's Blabosaur, who's the marketing and sales guy. There's Personelodon, who's HR, and Technodactyl, and she is the geek, the IT person. And by creating these characters, I was able to also put together little scenarios that the kids would relate to. You know, kids love dinosaurs, and they love imaginary things, and it was a good way to get good answers out of them. At the same time, it was an opportunity to poke fun at stereotypes in business management.
Right. And, Steve, I believe you told me that we could give a couple of copies of these away this hour.
Absolutely.
All right, folks, if you want a copy of this book, it's a lot of fun. I've enjoyed getting to know it and reading it. And you know, it might even be something, especially be fun for maybe some of your teenagers that maybe are thinking about business a little bit. And anyway, all you got to do if you want to win a copy of Steve's book, The Portable Business Source, is answer one of my trivia questions, 888-822-8255. And if you didn't get them earlier when I gave them out, I'll do that again later in the hour. Steve, I want to back up for just a second. And I want you to tell us a little bit about your background in dealing with families. I know that's your background, dealing with family issues. Well, tell us a little bit about what you've done in that area.
Okay. Well, as you mentioned, I'd written a lot of business books, and I had been writing business and business computing books for a number of years when we had children. And when our son became of television-watching age, my wife and I, she's a landscape architect who does corporate areas, urban parks, things like that.
Mm-hmm.
We said, all right, you know, television's kind of a noxious influence. What are we going to do with it? And we can further set out. We could have a policy 1 hour a day, or we could come up with something. And instead we thought maybe we could come up with a bunch of fun, goofy, zany activities that we could do and that he could do by himself when we're busy. And maybe he wouldn't want to watch television. And we started doing these, and lo and behold, it was working. Television was always an option for him, but he never had any interest in it. One of my publishers, Bob Adams, who had published a couple books that I had done on business and environment, said, "This is great. Parents across the country would love this thing." I said, "Hey, you're crazy, Bob. Get out of here." So he goes, no, have Ruth illustrate it, and you come up with the activities." Well, this became a national bestseller, 365 TV-free activities you can do with your child. And started a small cottage industry here. We did 9 other activity books. And during the process, I got interested in kids and electronic media, not just television, but video games and kids and computers. I started writing in that area for a number of magazines, wrote a couple books. And basically, that's how I got to know kids and families and the whole issue of how do you spend time with kids and really enjoy it and give yourself to them.
And so that's sort of how you identify children as a resource for business.
That's right. I mean, you know, I've been acting like a kid so long since doing the activity books, and I'm around so many of them, and their answers are often so insightful that it's that these guys are naturals.
Well, let's talk about, let's get back into the book a little bit now, and thank you for providing us with that background, because I did want to know how you came to think of children as a resource for business solutions. Give us a little bit of a tour of the book. You've told us about the characters. How is the book? Tell us about the architecture of the book.
Well, okay, it's simple. There's a little note from the scribe up front. I don't call myself an author in this. I call myself the scribe.
I see.
And I'm just kind of taking notes, your faithful scribe. And then there's a note from the chairman, all to the stakeholders, that's STEAK holders, from Businessaurus. There's a listing of the various scenarios, which range from tooth and claw, responding to competitive threats, down to make way for mammals, planning for succession. There's a little description, kind of doer's profiles of each of the characters, which is, of course, it's all tongue-in-cheek, or claw-in-cheek in this case, like for Consultosaurus, who was educated at the Hard Rock School of Business Administration, his favorite books being The 7 Habits of Highly Effective Predators, How to Make Friends and Digest Enemies, favorite pastime terrorizing small rodents, and personality traits of greedy, crafty, would eat his own, like hunting packs.
You've really given us consultants a bad name here.
I'm a consultant, too, so I love it. His motto, the claw is quicker than the eye, and his greatest achievement, re-engineered a company from 2,056 employees down to 2, the president and the janitor, if someone has emptied the trash after all.
Hey, wait, we've got to take a break.
Okay.
You know the definition of a consultant, don't you?
What's that?
It's a guy who knows 100 ways to make love to a woman, but doesn't know any women. 888-822-8255. Steve Bennett and I will be right back, folks. Stay with us. All right, we're back. It's 24 after the hour. I'm Jim Blassingame, the Small Business Advocate. We're visiting with our new friend and our special guest, Steve Bennett, the scribe of the Portable Business Saurus, a treasury of insight, wit, and wisdom from tomorrow's captains of industries. Basically, what he's done, folks, is he's asked in a very fun way by identifying the subjects as dinosaurs. He has asked children some fairly complex business questions, and those children have given him some pretty cut to the chase, right through all the baloney, real bedrock common sense answers. Would you say that was a fair assessment of what you've done here, Steve?
I would say so. And the answers range from just kind of childlike whimsy, and they're fun, to things that are so dead on that you close your eyes and it could be, say, Tom Peters or somebody uttering these things. For example, what kicked off the whole book and the idea for this book was I was trying to put together a book of kids' quotes, and I happened to do one on business. And I asked a child, say, if you owned a dinosaur store, and everyone liked your dinosaurs, and then another kid opened up a dinosaur store, and his T-Rex makes a roaring sound when you rub its tummy, what would you do? Because everyone's buying his T-Rex now. How can you get him back into your store? And he looked at me, and he goes, Steve, just make your T-Rex roar louder. And bingo. Is that the essence of marketing? Make your T-Rex roar
louder.
That was
his answer. I'll be darned.
Yeah, and then when I went back and reformulated the question and really pulled together a board of advisors, these 36 kids, the problem was this. People are buying our puppets for many years. They say, our puppets are simply the best. But a new company has started making their own dinosaur puppets. They call them Supersaurus puppets because they're quite large. Their T-Rex puppet even makes a roaring sound when you rub its nose. Their puppet costs a lot less money than ours, so everyone is now buying theirs and not ours. What can we do to get people to buy ours again? This from a 9-year-old named Dylan. All right, the answer. Make all of our puppets have sound effects, then lower our price to match their price. Don't go lower, though, because then they'll go lower, and we'll go lower, and they'll go lower, we'll go lower, and then the dinos will be free. Don't get price wars.
This is from a nine-year-old.
We should also do it secretly and take them by surprise. When they see our new puppets, they'll want to add sound to all their dino puppets. While they're adding sound, people will be buying ours, and we can take the money and do something else secretly, like marionettes, and surprise them again. Then we'll try to make marionettes. They'll try to make marionettes, too, but they won't have as much money, so theirs won't be as good. Then we'll make something else. Whatever they copy, we'll do it first. We'll do it better, too. Now, it's right there. I mean, the folly of price wars and the advantage of being first to market.
How do they, you know, this is it's common sense stuff, but you don't expect to find something, those kinds of insights and wisdom, really, in a nine-year-old.
Well, you know, it's just obvious, though. I mean, and you see companies engaging in mutually destructive price wars where nobody wins, okay? You see companies that are waiting around rather than being first to market with innovations, and, you know, this really captures it. And this child obviously has never been a captain of industry, but he might be later on. But in fact, it's really clear that when you go out and you look at how companies mess themselves up in a competitive way, he's nailed it.
Well, and you know, the way a lot of companies write things is all this psycho-techno-babble that they, you know, all the different seemingly sophisticated ways of writing their instructions to their employee instructions or whatever, you know, instead of just using plain English. That annoys me. I don't know how you feel about that.
Oh, I think biz buzz and business babble is just dreadful. But, you know, if companies were to, say, put up a placard that said, "We'll make our T-Rex roar louder," I think it's kind of capturing the thing. That would do it. Simple language, simple concepts. Hey, if a nine-year-old can nail it, why can't seasoned business people?
One of the things that I liked is the Jurassic Perks section, which is number six. It's called Controlling Runaway Expenses.
Yes. Now, this was a unique situation in which litigator was given a car.
And litigator, that's the attorney.
She's the attorney.
She's the attorney.
Yeah, she's very bad. And I decided to do some funny role reversal.
Now, is she worse than a consultant?
Well, no, she works for the company. She's a general counsel.
I mean, is she worse than the consultant? Is she badder than the consultant?
Oh, absolutely.
Okay, good. Well, I'm glad to know there's someone that's worse than the consultant.
That's right. Well, she was given a company car, but then we've learned that she uses it to take her family to the zoo, the movie stores, and the circus.
Mm-hmm.
Cashasaur, he's the CFO, says litigator should pay something every time she drives the car for her own use. Litigator says that whenever she drives, she's always thinking about her work, so she should not have to pay anything. What do you think we should do? Well, this is where the kid's sense of fairness comes right into it. And, some of the answers were, thinking about work, pretty pathetic. Thinking isn't enough. It's her job to think. If it's her job to think, then it's okay, but it's not her job. She's a lawyer. Well, she could be thinking about work, but she might also say that she was just thinking about work. You could surprise her when she got back and ask her what she was thinking about. It's very hard to make up something good in 1 second. You could put people in the movie theaters and toy stores to see if she goes there, or stick someone in the car to check on her. Maybe hide them in the trunk, but that would be boring. Also, if you eat in the trunk, you'd probably make a big mess, and then you'd have to sit in it.
Stand by, Steve. We've got to take a quick break. Folks, it's 29 after. I'm Jim Blassingame, the Small Business Advocate. Stay with us. Welcome back, heroes. It's 33 after the hour. I'm Jim Blassingame, the Small Business Advocate. Our special guest is Steve Bennett. He is the author of a new book, an exciting, fun new book called The Portable Business-Saurus, A Treasury of Insight, Wit, and Wisdom from Tomorrow's Captains of Industry. And I've got a couple of these I want to give away. All you have to do is answer one of my trivia questions, and apparently my trivia questions are too hard. One of them, Steve, I don't know, see if you think they're too hard. One of them is Tarzan appeared on this day for the first time in a comic strip, and I want to know who was the guy who created Tarzan. What is his name? And maybe that's too hard. Also, here's one. What were the first words that Samuel Morse transmitted over the telegraph? I thought all fifth grade students knew that question and that answer. And also, what country did Joan of Arc live in? What did Carl Sandburg do for a living? What does Nancy Lopez do for a living? Are those hard questions?
Well, they're getting easier as you go on.
Well, I tried to throw in a softball there. 888-822-8255. That's the phone number to call if you want to win a copy of Steve's book, The Portable Business Saurus, or if you want to ask us a question about your business. Maybe I'm sure Steve will have a question, have an answer that one of his children's, one of the boards of directors, his children would have to say about your question about your business. 888-822-8255. And Steve, You've got a website, haven't you?
I've got a website called www.businessaurus.com. That's B-U-S-I-N-E-S-S-A-U-R-U-S. And there's a lot of fun things on them. There's some interactive games, which are absolutely mindless, but guaranteed to waste time and have a good time while you should be working. It's a good way to take a break. Some things about the book and some additional things in there that you won't find anywhere, like the details of the first B-Rex find, which was an intact Tyrannosaurus skeleton with a proto-Gucci briefcase. And it's a lot of fun stuff on there.
All right, that's good. Businessaurus.com. All right, 888-822-8255. Steve, let's talk about the way children cut right through everything. They use just the common sense that God gave them as children. They're unaffected by all the baggage that we have as adults. They've got instincts that you wouldn't think children would have. Typically, you think you develop your instincts. But these children have basic instincts, don't they?
Well, absolutely, and it's something that we seem to forget as we get older, and everything seems so complicated. Let me read you a response here to Chapter 11, which is Empty Caves, Downsizing for Dollars. The problem. Consultosaurus says he has a great way for us to save money. We'll have fewer dinos doing more work. We'll tell the dinos who stay and do the extra work that we believe they can do it. Is this really a great idea? And if we do it, how do we choose who goes and who stays? Well, this is reengineering, of course, and which has generated no small dearth of books and articles and controversy, although...
And unemployed people who became small business owners.
That's right. So it's been actually a real boon for your listeners there. But anyhow, here's the answer. This is from a 7-year-old, mind you, named Galen. This is not a great idea. It's a very bad idea. You'll fire a lot of dinos for no reason. You think you'll save money, but you won't. If you have less dinos, you'll make less puppets, and so you won't make as much money. If you put an advertisement on TV for a new puppet and lots of people want it, there won't be enough for everybody because you don't have enough dinos to work the machines, and the people who want the puppets will get mad. Also, you can't just say, this half gets fired and this doesn't. You have to have the right dinos staying on the job, and they might be the ones who want the most money. For example, you need someone who's really good at making toys. Then you have to have someone who's good at checking. If someone accidentally makes a puppet with 3 fingers instead of 5, the checker needs to find it. It's very hard to open a puppet's mouth with your thumb, pinky, and third finger. You try it. You also need to have a good shipper so the puppets get to the right place. If they get shipped to the wrong place, you won't get your money. But what if those dinos get sick? You need to have more than one of these dinos, so you cut it back where it all started. Yep, that Consultosaurus dude is wrong again. Well, you know, it's interesting. A few years after pushing right-sizing, I think it was Dr. Hammer who came out and said he'd forgotten an important element, the people.
Yeah.
And in point of fact, Galen was right on target. You know, you have to have the right people. You have to have the knowledge that when these big companies downsize, what they're really doing is they're throwing out years and years of earned and learned knowledge.
They're throwing their brain trust away.
You can't replace it. But, you know, that brain trust goes out and becomes tomorrow's competitor. So
mm-hmm.
I think
that's exactly right.
That's right. I think Galen, 7-year-old, nailed it right on the button.
Yeah, absolutely.
On the money.
One of the things that when we talk about baggage, things that we've inherited, things that are passed down, things that stick in our minds that really maybe have no merit. As you were talking about all that, I was reminded of a story that I tell, and I may have told this on the show once before a while back, but a small child, a young girl was watching her mother cook a ham, and she said, and her mother takes the ham out of the wrapper and everything, and she cuts off the small end of the ham and just lays it aside and puts the rest of the ham in a pan. And the daughter says, Mother, why did you do that? And she said, well, that's the way you cook a ham. And she says, well, what do you mean? Why did you cut that off? She said, well, that's the way my mother taught me to cook a ham. And she said, well, why does she do that? And she said, I don't know, let's call her. So they called Grandma, and Grandma said, that's the way my mother taught me to cook a ham. And you cut the end of it off and put it in the pan. And so she said, well, why does she do that? And she said, well, I don't know, let's call her. So they called Great-Grandma. And they said, Great-Grandma, why do you cut the end of the ham off before you cooked it? She said, well, I never had a pan big enough to hold a whole ham.
There you go. It's legacy thinking.
That's exactly right. And children don't have that, at least at 9 years old, do they?
No.
All right, folks,
yeah.
We're going to be right back. It's 39 after the hour. I'm Jim Blassingame, the Small Business Advocate. 888-822-8255. That's our phone number. And our special guest and our new friend is Steve Bennett, the author of The Portable Business Saurus. Stay with us. We'll be right back. All right, we're back. It's 44 after the hour. I'm Jim Blassingame, the Small Business Advocate. And our special guest is Steve Bennett, the scribe, not the author, the scribe of The Portable Business Saurus, a treasury of insight, wit, and wisdom from tomorrow's captains of industry. This book is about portraying a business question in a fun dinosaur way, so to speak, and using a dinosaur, what's the period? Not Mesozoic. What is
the Cretaceous.
Cretaceous venue, and asking them to answer business questions out of this Cretaceous period, and that Steve has put all this together in a book. It's a lot of fun. It's got cartoons and drawings and a lot of great questions. One of the commercials that I like on television, Steve, is the one where the lady, she has three children, and it looks like she may be a single mother, and she can't take her children to the beach because she has to wait on a phone call from a client. I don't even remember the product right now, but the little girl, the little 5-year-old, says, "Mommy, I wish I could be a client." And boy, my children used to have said that to me when my children were little. I don't remember exactly what the example was, but they said things like that to me, and it was like you know, somebody just shot an arrow right into your heart.
Yeah, boy,
you know, "Mommy, I wish I could be one of your clients." Well, of course, and the rest of the story is that she takes her cell phone with her to the beach, and she gets the call on the beach.
I don't know. Whenever I see someone with a cell phone on the beach there, I think, boy, something's wrong here.
Well, the only thing about it is, you know, sometimes you got to do what you got to do, and you know, and she took the call, and the kids were swimming in the ocean, so that was a good thing.
I confess, I take my pager cell phone when I go bicycling. So.
Well, I do remember one time I went on vacation, and I remember my children were like 14 and 13 or so, and it's been a long time ago, and they said, "Dad, don't take your computer this year."
Mm.
And boy, there's one of those shots to the heart,
yep.
You know. As you say, they cut right to the chase, you know, and they weren't being mean or anything. It was just an instinctive thing for them to say.
That's right. They have an instinctive sense of fairness, and they just say what they're feeling.
Tell us about another chapter in your book.
Okay, well, there's a couple here that might interest your readers. Here's one in which Personelodon goes to a special class where she learns that you can motivate dinos in the company by making them wear hats that say, "I love my job." So I ask, is this a good idea or a dumb idea to make employees wear hats that say, "I love my job"? And the answers are really stellar. Here's a 7-year-old.
I like the first one.
Yeah, hats don't make people feel good. Compliments do. Does that get it? You can still hate your job even if you wear one of the hats. People would like their jobs better if you show them respect and not say things like, "Oh, what really ugly clothes you're wearing today." You know?
Now, the kids actually said these things.
Yes.
I mean, I believe you, but I mean, they use these words.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
I mean, there's just a hair of editing in here to, you know, cut off things that are too long.
Right.
If you make someone wear a hat that says, "We love our job," and they don't, then you're really asking them to lie. That doesn't seem fair. You can get people excited about work by having new puppet time once a week. No one would be supervised. They could design and make anything. They could even invent new puppet types or just for fun things like puppets of evil little people with little brains who ruled the Earth 50 million years ago. That's a lot better than giving out hats, don't you think? Finally,
yeah.
Forget the hats. Just give everyone a raise.
Now, let me tell you something. If you're going to appreciate these answers, and whether you read them in the book, folks, or whether you hear them from your own children or from your employees, because sometimes our employees, and I'm not trying to compare them to children, but sometimes they don't have all the baggage that you have, and sometimes they cut through all the BS like children do. And what you've got to do in order to benefit from this as a decision maker is you've got to let this advice sink in. You've got to be receptive. You've got to stop and say, "Okay, the first thing that I do is not going to be to react to what the person says. I'm going to actually let it come into my head and let it sink in and maybe even sleep on it a little bit."
I think that's great advice, Jim. And that's what this book is really about, is listening and shoving aside, again, your preconceptions and just saying, "Is there a good idea here?" And you're right. I mean, you know, all of these silly motivation programs that people do with employees, they, you know, cut through it. I mean, wearing the hats and the badges and all that kind of stuff, that doesn't work. They want either tangible benefits or something that promotes self-respect or gives them an opportunity to be creative. I mean, look what 3M, a multi-billion-dollar company, has done with that idea of 10% creative flex time, where if you're a researcher or engineer, I mean, you spend 10% of your time doing something utterly unrelated. It might even be 15%. That's how Post-it notes were discovered, and I won't bore everyone with that story because it's only been rehashed 500 times. But in point of fact, I think one of the things that really drives people, and I've, you know, worked for plenty of companies, both as an employee and consultant, is the opportunity to feel some sort of ownership in the ideas and the processes and to feel like you're really making a contribution.
Right. Well, yeah. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
Okay. There's another chapter here that I thought would be kind of interesting called Happy Omnivores, Delighting Your Customers. And the story is a customer comes in with one of our puppets, and she was very angry. The puppet was dirty and shredded and looked like the dog had chewed it. She said, that's how the puppet was when she opened the box. She wants her money back, her new puppet. Do you think the customer is always right, and what should we do here? Well, before I answer that, I want to mention that a friend of mine used to own a carpeting store that also sold small rugs. And someone actually did something like this. They came in with a rug that was probably 10 years old and been run over, and the dog had chewed it, and she said, oh, I just bought this. I want my money back. And he would have been better off if he'd had some of these answers here.
Yeah, and we're going to get to those just a second. Steve, let's take a break. Folks, it's 50 after the hour. I'm Jim Blasingame, the Small Business Advocate. Stay with us. We'll be right back. All right, we're back at 54 after the hour. I'm Jim Blasingame, the Small Business Advocate. Our special guest is our new friend Steve Bennett, the author of The Portable Business Saurus, A Treasury of Insight, Wit, and Wisdom from Tomorrow's Captains of Industry. Folks, this is a fun book, and if you'd like to think out of the box a little bit, if you'd like to be able to maybe break down some of the old paradigms that you have, there's some answers that the children give in this book that I think will do that if you'll just let them roll around in your head a little bit. Steve, please tell our audience where they can get your book.
Amazon.com, Barnes & Noble, and most likely your local bookseller. Most of the chains have it, and I'm seeing it crop up in the independent stores as well.
And they can also get it at your website?
Well, the website will steer you back to Amazon or Barnes & Noble.
Okay, good. And you have another website.
Oh, yeah. That's my day job when I'm not writing fun books like this. I'm a corporate media trainer, and listeners might be interested in some of the services. It's at www.mediamentor.com. That's Media Mentor, one word.
All right. Good. Thank you for giving us that. Folks, I recommend you check this book out. Go to the bookstore, pick it up and look at it. I think you'll have fun. But please, when you look at the children's responses or when you think about these children's responses, don't think of them sort of, you know, one of the things that helped me when I was looking at your book, Steve, is just sort of unfocus. Read one of the questions, I mean, one of the answers, I should say, and then sort of unfocus your eyes a little bit or close your eyes and think about that question. And you can see that the children are cutting through all the nonsense and all the baggage.
That's right. That's right. We talked about this clawed and shredded puppet one where the customer returns something that's obviously been abused. And the question is the customer always right? This from an 11-year-old. Is the customer always right? Literally, no. Proverbially, yes.
Yeah.
That kind of says it, doesn't it?
Exactly. No question about it. You talk about these children being the next generation of consumers and employees. What do we got to look forward to with these guys?
Very savvy kids who can't be snowed, and their answers to questions about honesty and advertising and workplace fairness, they're startling. And basically, I think that as employers of these future employees, that we need to expect a very technically savvy group of kids and a group of kids that understands more about business and transactions and human relations than any generation that's gone before.
Well, there's no question about it, because they have really full force grown up in the consumer age, haven't they?
That's right. And, you know, this is also the most unprecedented era of openness with kids where, you know, through media and, you know, for better or worse, I mean, kids are learning more about the adult world, again, for better or worse, than any generation before. So get ready.
And I'll tell you something else. I don't think that they're going to be as materialistic as their parents were.
No.
What do you think?
I agree with that. I think that
quality of life is going to, I think I just have a feeling that their quality of life is going to be important to them, not so much the almighty dollar.
That's right. These kids are also growing up in environments, many of them, where they're taught to value their creativity and their contributions, and rather than just, you know, rote things that they get in school, kids are really being taught today to be creative, and that's a good thing. And they're going to carry that to the workforce, and they're going to expect that kind of satisfaction from their jobs, and that's going to be another one of the intangible payables.
Right, right. Well, Steve, thank you very much. We've got to wrap it up for the hour. Thank you very much for being with us. You did a great job today, and we're looking forward to having you back.
Well, thanks so much. It was a great morning.
Thank you, sir. Folks, that's Steve Bennett. He's the author of The Portable Business Source, the book I recommend to you. Let me tell you about what's coming up. Some of our next guests, Stephanie Denton, is going to be with us to talk about becoming organized in 1999, and Mike Tanner is going to be with us to talk about privatizing Social Security, how important that is, and how the process is going. Right now, I got to wrap things up. Before I go, I want to thank my heroes, small business owners, because without your courage, hard work, and devotion to your dreams, America would not be the greatest country in the world. And remember, when opportunity knocks, it doesn't know you've had a bad day. Greet it with a smile. This is Jim Blassingame, the Small Business Advocate, and this program is for you.
Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blassingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc., intended for the private use of our audience. Except as otherwise provided by copyright law, all other copying, redistribution, or publication without prior written consent is prohibited. All rights reserved.